Earlier this week, the British bank Standard Chartered agreed to pay $340 million in fines to an obscure New York State agency, ending an inquiry into the billions of dollars in transactions that the bank is said to have carried out for various entities in Iran. Joining me now for a look at what happened at Standard Chartered and whether we can expect to hear more about further investigations is Thomas Easton, the New York finance and economics correspondent for The Economist. Very pleased to welcome him back to our show for today's second Backstory segment. Hello.
Hi, I'm very flattered to be asked. Come on.
I think I'm not alone in having never heard of this bank before a few weeks ago. What kind of bank is Standard Chartered?
Well, Standard Chartered was founded about 160 years ago in part by a British hat maker who also founded a magazine in Britain to advocate for free trade, which was The Economist. So, in fact, we share the same founder. It was the merger.
But there's no conflict of interest here?
Well, there is a statue in the lobby of the Standard Chartered building in Hong Kong and one in our building of the same man. And in fact, I think the one in our building had an interesting history. It was thrown out of various colonial outposts that Standard Chartered occupied around the world. But Standard Chartered was a merger of two banks, one primarily in Africa and another in Asia. And it's got a very, very large presence around the world, but not in developed markets. So you don't see it in America and you don't see it in Britain. But and here's an important caveat. America is still very, very important for Standard Chartered because most of these emerging markets, when they do business, do them in, when they're cross-border, they do them in U.S. dollars. So at some point, even though they don't have domestic business, their transactions come through the United States, which is core to this whole case.
So let me understand this. This is a British bank that has a little presence in Britain or the United States, but it does most of its business in dollars.
It does cross-border business in dollars between the 70-odd countries that it has business in. So if you're in Uganda or if you're in Kenya or if you're in South Africa and you're trading with China, you would likely go through dollars. And those dollars, for a fraction of a second, often go through the United States. And that's what put Standard Chartered into the regulatory net of America.
And what are they accused of doing?
Well, that's quite interesting. It's because the settlement is not really a full settlement, and there's no accompanying acknowledgement of really what they did. But in the charge that was filed by the New York State Department of Financial Services. And let me add, there are four other investigations of Standard Chartered going on at this moment, none of which have been resolved.
And the federal government seems to be rather annoyed by what happened here in New York State because they either wanted to do something bigger or perhaps, as we've seen in the past, didn't want to do anything.
Well, the fact is, this story is just laden with sub-themes and backstories. And one of them is the regulatory chaos that exists in America. You have numerous regulators crawling all over these institutions, all with different responsibilities, all with different resources. And if you don't really understand what they did, and there's no indication in a settlement that there is an understanding of what they did, you could actually be running a legal extortion racket for all sorts of firms that are too frightened to fight because if you pull their licenses, they're effectively dead.
So that's what they're suggesting. Well, we had to pay this fine because the alternative was we would be out of business in the United States.
Well, the reality is they had to settle or they would be out of business in the United States and they might be out of business in the world. That doesn't make them good guys. It just means they had to settle the thing and they have to settle the other four investigations that are coming up.
So they're accused of helping Iran at a time when that was illegal.
Sort of. In 1995, America has put in various sanctions against Iran, financial sanctions beginning under the Carter administration. But in 1995, the Clinton administration put in sanctions on what U.S. banks could do in terms of Iran. And because Standard Chartered effectively has a New York banking license, it is an American firm. But the American laws on sanctions were not echoed around the world. So, in fact, banks around the world and countries around the world could deal with Iran and do transactions with them. In America, you are actually allowed to use the financial system to do dealings with Iran with certain caveats if you did disclosure. You had to say who you were dealing with, and there were a couple other caveats. The accusation here is that between 2001 and 2007, there were 60,000 transactions worth in excess of $250 billion done with Iran. And the transactions may not have been illegal, but the disclosure was. In fact, they were stripping out the information that said that these were for Iranian entities. And in fact, the volume of the stripping was so massive that they actually automated the process to alter the information tied to these dealings.
Now, is there evidence that the management at the bank was aware of these transactions?
That is a really very, very important point. There's the charge that was filed by the New York State Financial Services Bureau is just swaddled with all sorts of insinuations that this was the fact. So if you really believe that the bank was doing something wrong, and that the management, much of which is still there, was involved in it, then you would think that at the very least, the settlement would have something to say about the management. In fact, the $340 million that they're paying is effectively being paid by the shareholder, and there is no indication in the very, very preliminary disclosure they've given so far that management has been implicated at all, notwithstanding a quote in the original charge.
Even though the implication is that the bank took steps to hide what was happening.
Not only implications they took steps to hide, but there's a man saying in it, and he's quoted, and it may be a hearsay quote, but it's in the charge filed by the Financial Services Department that says, who is America to determine the global standard for doing business with Iran? And the irony is, in some ways, that's true. Who is America to determine the global standard? After all, the rest of the world did not go along with America, but it did. And, you know, tough luck for this guy for not following it, right?
Well, but it's also because the money has to flow through the United States. So if it just went from
From 70 countries that Standard Chartered was in that did not include America, they would not have been doing something illicit.
Are they accused of breaking only the money laundering laws, or are they suspected of having broken any anti-terrorism laws as well? Because part of the sanctions involves sending money to organizations that may be engaged in terrorism.
So let me go back to the charges and not the settlement. Now, the charge here is basically a very broad description of what went on. And there are two nuanced comments that the bank made in its statement. They contested the charges, and they said there were only 14 million in disputed transactions. And by the way, in the settlement, they say there are 250 billion, quote unquote, at issue. I don't know what at issue is. It's definitely legalese. It kind of covers both them and the New York State banking authorities. But let's go to terrorism, because that's the second key point in their statement. They say in their statement that they did no new business with terrorists, with Iran over the past 5 years. No new business. Now, what does that mean? What is new business in banking terms, and what is old business? They still could be doing business, so they've not clarified that. The second thing is they did no business with people who were identified as terrorists at the time they did business. That's in their statement. Now, the question is, were these people subsequently identified as being terrorists, or did they do other things? We don't know. So that was a very, very carefully constructed statement that they made that was twofold. No new business with Iran and no known business with terrorists at the time that they did the business. It's an open question and a good question whether they actually facilitated terrorist finance at the time.
We are talking about $250 billion, and even if this is a small bank, how did it go unnoticed for so long? That's a lot of money.
Well, there are hundreds and hundreds. I think that I read something that Standard Chartered has over $100 billion of transactions flowing through its system on a daily basis. If you look at the charges, it said the state oil company of Iran had $500 million worth of dollar issues every day to process. So we're not actually saying that they're making huge gobs of money on that $500 million. What we're saying is there is a flood of money that runs around the world, and it went through their systems. And, you know, whether it was 14 million in disputed transactions or 250 billion, it's still a small fraction of the big flows around the world on it.
My guest is Thomas Easton, New York finance and economics correspondent for The Economist. We are taking a backstory look at what happened at Standard Chartered. The $340 million fine is the largest fine ever collected by a single U.S. regulator in a money laundering case. And as part of the settlement, the bank is acknowledging some misconduct. Why pay that money if there's such a big discrepancy between what the two sides say is the real story?
Well, let's just talk about that settlement amount. There's been no economic justification whatsoever that's been stated about why they chose $340 million.
As opposed to $150 million or
billion.
$800 billion.
Yes, exactly. And in fact, this whole standard of big settlements, I really date back to Spitzer. And I remember asking him, why was there a $1 billion settlement in the research cases? And he said, you know, $1 billion, it was big. It would get headlines. I mean, that was the economic logic that he gave. So we don't really know. There's been no – and it's not that we haven't asked. I have asked the bank and I have asked the New York Department of Financial Services, why $340 million? We don't know. Now, clearly they felt they had to settle the thing as quickly as possible. Their stock lost about 25% or more the day it was announced. If they were knocked out of America, they were dead. So they came up with some sort of number. I mean, look, we're all waiting – if they do not put out a statement explaining this sort of thing, the settlement will be in some way substantially weaker because
Finish.
Well, it'll be weaker because we don't really understand why people are being assessed with penalties and really what they did. I mean, you want to understand what they did wrong and what the consequences are of wrongdoing as opposed to paying to go away. And particularly if management, you know, management has a very, very plausible case right now that they just did something to be expedient. The stock rebounded after these charges were settled, not that they did something wrong.
We talked recently, you and I, about HSBC, which was accused of becoming a conduit for Mexican drug traffickers. And we discussed the different layers of regulations that these banks have to comply with for foreign transactions. Is that as much of an issue in this case where sanctions against Iran have been in place for over 30 years?
Well, in this, you know, the sanctions have changed, and of course they got tighter after 2007, but HSBC, I believe, was involved in some of these same transactions. I think at the time I mentioned to you there would be other banks that would be brought up in the case, and I wouldn't be surprised if there are many, many other banks. And let's face it, from what we see in these charges, if you just were a little cleverer at how you rerouted this money, you wouldn't even be brought up for charges. So it's very likely that there are a lot of international organizations around the world that are doing exactly these kind of things with the same moral implications that we will never know about.
Now, the agency that they paid the fines to is the New York State Department of Financial Services, a relatively new regulator.
Yeah.
What happens with this money? Does it go into the New York State Bank?
Yeah, I mean, there's a
New York State budget.
Well, you know,
is this going to pay for part of the deficit New York State?
Of course, that's not part of the statement either. And that means there's a lot of financial incentives for different regulators around the country to just file cases and take a payment and go away. Connecticut has just become part of a filing on the LIBOR case. I mean, why not?
Part of the
I'd like to sue as well.
I'd like a little piece myself. But the allegations have ruffled feathers of some regulators, as you said, but also in the U.K. Hasn't Mervyn King, the U.K.'s central banker, been critical of this action by New York State?
Yeah, because typically, and you know, you can say whether this is good or bad, regulators talk about these things and they try to work out some plan and then they try to work out some punitive scheme, and there is reason to worry about what regulators do. The way this was done could have effectively killed Standard Charter overnight for allegations that were never going to be proven. And in fact, it's not really clear what New York State's new office really contributed to the investigation other than reading the disclosures that Standard Charter itself provided. So I think Britain thinks that there might have been a shakedown. And there's nothing in the settlement that really confirms that it was not a shakedown, even though it may actually be a very good thing.
Well, it might be a very good way of taking care of New York State's budget, because this morning it's being reported that the New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman has sent subpoenas to seven banks in connection with the ongoing investigation into the rigging of the LIBOR that initially looked at Barclays Bank. So maybe we'll be getting some more fines.
So
Deutsche Bank, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase, Royal Bank of Scotland, Barclays, HSBC, UBS, they got a lot of money.
Not only do they have a lot of money and fines coming out, that if you're a bank, you have regulatory subpoenas or whatever the equivalent is coming in from innumerable different sources, and you're actually devoting tremendous resources in dealing with them, and it can't be a cohesive way of actually running an operation and providing credit. And so when people say the economy is troubled and banks aren't really doing their job, in a sense they are doing their job. They're responding to their primary audience, which in many cases right now is a bunch of regulatory claims.
We have only seconds left, but let me get this straight. The real issue is not whether a crime has been committed, but whether a cover-up has been committed?
The crime was, in this case, non-disclosure of what they did. So, yeah. But this, as we've touched on, this case just is redolent with backstories and other issues, too.
Thomas Easton is the New York Finance and Economics Correspondent for The Economist. We've been talking about what happened at Standard Chartered, but I have a sense, Thomas, that this story is going to continue because there's been an awful lot of hanky-panky going on in the banking industry.
And the question is, what does the world have to do with international financial regulation? And it's not straightforward or simple.